History through the eyes of those who lived it. This is Hometown Heroes, presented on the air and online by Provident Payments, proudly honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the program that reminds you no matter where you live in this great country of ours, no matter how big or how small your hometown might be, there are stories there that should not go untold. And they really don't have to go untold as long as we're willing to take a little initiative and ask a few questions and then employ enough patience to listen as memories that may have been buried for decades start to make their way back to the surface again. We want to honor our veterans for their service and sacrifice. We want to preserve their stories so we never forget the price that's been paid for our freedom. And what we realize along the way is that not only are we educated, not only are we entertained, but so often we end up inspired by these stories from our greatest generation. One of the ways that World War II history gets passed on to younger generations is when special anniversaries are observed, like this past Friday when gatherings in both Hawaii and at the National World War II Memorial in Washington, D.C. commemorated the 77th anniversary of the official end of World War II with the signing of the Instruments of Surrender aboard the battleship USS Missouri in Tokyo Bay. But there's another anniversary that snuck by last week with very little fanfare. Usually when we talk about World War II anniversaries, it's with regard to specific battles beginning or ending. But in this case, it's the 80th anniversary of a special group of servicemen that the average American knows very little about, or perhaps has never even heard of, the Munford Point Marines. A feature film is in the works about the first African Americans to be allowed into the Marine Corps while the U.S. Armed Forces remained segregated during World War II. On August 26, 1942, the very first of them arrived at Camp Munford Point in Jacksonville, North Carolina. In just a couple weeks, on September 20th, ABC television stations will debut a one-hour special called Our America Mission Munford Point. And I'll explain in a moment what that mission is. If you go to hometownheroesradio.com or the Hometown Heroes Facebook page, you can check out the official trailer for the project, which we're going to hear an excerpt from right now.
The Colorado Marine Corps asked publicly if it was a choice of 250,000 blacks or 5,000 whites. His response was, I'd rather take the whites.
The Munford Point Marines were a project. They were allowed into the Marine Corps to prove that they could not be Marines.
For a long time, the guys who served tried to tell everybody our story, but nobody was listening.
The Marine Corps didn't want you to know. It's just that simple.
When you say Tuskegee Airmen, 9 out of 10 people know who you're talking about. We don't have that luxury at Munford Point, but that is the objective. To get their story told to the point that it's a common story.
Munford Point Marines, we all stand and salute you for giving without being asked, for doing what was right and true.
So again, that's the trailer for Our America, Mission Munford Point, the TV special, which will debut September 20th. The mission is to track down surviving Munford Point Marines or their families to make sure they receive a special award. It's been a decade since that group was awarded the Congressional Gold Medal, which can be awarded posthumously to a veteran's family. But only about 2,000 of the approximately 20,000 Marines who trained at Munford Point between 1942 and 49, when Harry Truman finally integrated the armed forces, only about 10% of them have actually received the medal. So if you think you know a veteran or a family who hasn't been recognized yet, I have some information for you online for how to make that happen. One of the men who did receive the Congressional Gold Medal in person in Washington, D.C. 10 years ago is Robert Hammond, who served overseas with the first group of black Marines as a Navy corpsman. His memories not only help us understand the less than ideal conditions at Munford Point, but also many other realities that came with being one of the roughly 1 million African Americans to serve in those segregated armed forces during World War II. Like just about every World War II veteran you've ever heard on Hometown Heroes, Hammond's memories of December 7th, 1941 are vivid and clear. The Pennsylvania native was in his mother's hair salon when the world changed for him and so many others.
I was just finished cleaning the salon, and I was waxing the floor when Walter Winchell came over on the radio and made reference to the fact that Pearl Harbor had been bombed by the Japanese. I'll never forget that day.
And this was in New Jersey?
It was in Camden, New Jersey, yes.
So obviously it registered for you. You just said you never forget it. But what do you think the impact was on you at the time? I mean, you were a little too young to get involved right away, but did you have that inkling that maybe this would be something that you'd get sucked into at some point?
Well, young guys at the time were basically looking at movies like the Cowboys, John Wayne and Buck Jones, Ken Maynard, all these old cowboys. And it was somewhat of being a hero, of doing something that no one else did, you know, like the Lone Ranger, something like that. He was there. And to do things outstanding and basically do it for the United States of America. Because where I grew up, I didn't grow up under the system of Jim Crow and segregation. I came from a mixed race family. I didn't experience too much of the things that a lot of people did at that time.
It's a bit ironic that I guess you had to join the military to experience segregation, because it was a segregated armed forces. How did you end up serving in the Marine Corps as a corpsman?
Well, right after Pearl Harbor, I became an air warden. Used to ride my bicycle around. Anyone that had lights on, we would tell them to put it out. We were kind of afraid of Hitler at the time, because they used to send the Graf Zeppelin over, and it had those swastikas on it as youngsters. It would land in Lake Hood, New Jersey, and they had all these ropes and things hanging down, and somebody told us, you better run and hide, because those ropes are going to come down and bring you up to that Zeppelin. They're going to carry you away. So when that thing came, we would run and hide. I was much younger then when that Zeppelin came, but I'll never forget that. I was in junior high school, I think, at the time. And they talked about the fifth column. Like, we'd go to Philadelphia at certain times, and down Market Street, the brown shirts would march and carry the Nazi banner. I remember that. And we used to throw tomatoes at them. That was all part of my growing up at the time. When I became 17, my oldest brother, he went to West Point and became a Buffalo Soldier. Wow. Matter of fact, my great-grandfather was the bandmaster for the original Buffalo Soldiers. And my oldest brother was the last of the Buffalo Soldiers, because they disbanded that. They used to go on parade and things like that from West Point, and they disbanded that and put those men into Patton's Army. And so he went in the Army. My cousins went into the Army. My dad was gone. He had passed away years earlier. And it was just seeing uniforms. And all the guys wanted to wear a uniform. And at the time, I wanted one. After being an air raid warden and getting involved, became 17, I found out if I could go into the service at age 17, but the one that I could go into was the United States Navy. So I went down and joined the Navy and brought the papers back to get my mother to sign it. And she wouldn't sign it. And I said, well, if you don't sign it, I'll sign it for you. So she said, you really want to go? I said, yeah, nothing's going to happen to me. I'll be all right. So she signed it, and I went into the Navy.
Looking at these pictures on your wall, you look every bit of that tender age of 17 with that Navy hat on after you enlisted. What was that like, being welcomed to the Navy? And did you have any idea what you were in for?
No, I did not know what I was in for. Most of my friends were Italian people, Jewish people, and Polish people. And we went to school together in Camden. And a lot of these guys, they joined the Navy too. So we got on the train and we're going to Great Lakes. And what they did, the train went south. And as it got into Washington, D.C., they put it on the side, the train. And a conductor came through. And persons of color, you got to move to another car. So I said, I'm not moving any place. I'm staying right here. You can't make me move. So my Italian friends and everybody crowded around me, and they said, no, if he moves, we move. Wow. So they said, well, we'll get the police in here and lock all of you up. I said, well, we don't care. We're going to war anyway. And I said, yeah, I might as well die here than die overseas. I said, matter of fact, what's going on? And then they came in and said, well, you're down south now and you cross the Mason-Dixon line and we don't mix. At that time, they call us colored. Yeah. They don't mix colored and white together anywhere in the south. And that was brand new to me. And it was also new to my friends. Well, we grew up together, went to school together and things like that, played ball. And they weren't going to take any stuff about all that segregation and Jim Crowism that they had in the South. So we stayed in that car. They just locked the doors on us, wouldn't let anybody in there. So the car went through D.C., went through Virginia, and got over into, I think it was Ohio. And that's when they didn't say anything. They came through and said, oh, you guys can go wherever you want. They unlocked the doors.
It sounds like, at least for a while, that was a pretty rude awakening for you. And I guess the question is, was that a sign of similar things to come for you?
Yes, it was. Pure hell. I'll put it that way. I mean, I had to endure a lot at that time. On the way to Great Lakes, when we got there, this is in the winter. Around December 14th or 15th is when I got in the Great Lakes. I had on an overcoat, two pairs of pants, a wool sweater. And when I got there, we had to stand in line outside in the cold for about 2 hours to get into camp. A man in front of me, he was just freezing. He came from the deep south and he was cold. So I took off a pair of pants and gave it to him and gave him my sweater, so he could stay warm. Later on, we got in the chow hall. They fed us chicken soup and bologna sandwiches. And they gave us prune juice. Never forget that. And then they marched us over to a place where it was late at night, and we went to bed. And the next morning was pure hell that we had to go through at that camp, because this is when they sent all the white guys to one camp and all the colored guys or black guys to another camp. And I didn't understand that. I said, this is the United States Navy and they separating us? Why? And I asked the officer, why are you doing that? He said, just shut the... Mm-hmm. Yep, yeah, yep. And I didn't say any more. And they sent me to a place called Camp Lawrence. It was a segregated camp at Great Lakes. And I went through 6 weeks of boot training over there. We marched and everything and went through the rigors of what we had to do in the Navy at the time. Now, the strange thing that happened was my mother's brother was a captain in the Navy, and he was the personnel officer. He found out I was there, sent for me. I wouldn't give him away, though. I just said, well... I said, Uncle Charlie, don't worry about it.
And am I inferring correctly that he was Caucasian?
Yes, he was. See, there's my mother's picture over there. And my sister, yes.
So no one's putting it together that you two are related. He is your Caucasian uncle, that you're the only one who knows he's your uncle.
Yes. Uh-huh. So I didn't say anything. And what he did, he put me in the Great Lakes Choir. I enjoyed that because I got liberty every weekend. We had to go into Chicago and practice and sing. We got on the radio and we'd sing all sorts of songs. Every Sunday we would sing with the Great Lakes Choir. And I did that until even through course. Captain Hayes sent, at the time, he said, Robert, I'm going to send you to course school. He said, matter of fact, we need about 20 some of you guys from Camp Lawrence to go to course school. So they gave us a test. 22 of us passed it, and we went to Navy Corps School and went 9 weeks of training at Great Lakes. And from there, they sent us to the Brooklyn Naval Hospital. They sent 10 of us there. Some of the other guys went to St. Albans to a hospital there for further training. Then things begin to happen right after that. I got used to the difference at Great Lakes, it wasn't that bad because we ate, we slept, we were clean, we had clean clothes. We could go into Chicago, went out on Liberty whenever we could, and we had a lot of fun. I mean, being 17 going on 18, what do you do? You know, you go look for girls and you drink some booze and then you just go dancing at the time. Duke Ellington and Lionel Hampton was playing Take the A Train and Flying Home at the time. And that was the music. We didn't listen to Benny Goodman and Glenn Miller. We didn't like that kind of music. You couldn't dance to it right. We'd go into the State Theater and the Regal Theater in Chicago, and that's where I first learned about Ella Fitzgerald. She was singing there with a man named Chick Webb, a drummer. And we had a lot of fun in Chicago. But that broke up the monotony with the kinds of things we went through at Great Lakes. But anyway, from there, over at the Brooklyn Naval Hospital, that's another experience. A very traumatic experience.
Which we're going to hear about when we come back. Robert Hammond received his Congressional Gold Medal 10 years ago, but the majority of the Mumford Point Marines have never received that honor, and maybe by sharing this story today, there will be some families who decide to make that connection and collect our country's gratitude for a trailblazing veteran's sacrifice. Go to hometownheroesradio.com for more information on that, and we'll hear more of Robert Hammond's unique story when Hometown Heroes comes right back after this.
Do you ever have those moments where you realize you've been settling for less than the best for far too long? Sometimes we just accept the status quo without looking around for better ways to do things. And I've got to tell you, when it comes to your money, I believe I found a better way with EECU. Take a look at myeecu.org and you'll see why. EECU is not a bank. It's a nonprofit credit union that's all about taking care of you, the member. That's one of the reasons EECU just keeps growing and growing. Close to 300,000 members now in 10 different California counties. Over 30,000 ATMs, free mobile banking. And what I really love is how EECU always goes above and beyond to serve the community. In 2013, the leadership and generosity of EECU helped establish Central Valley Honor Flight. More than 1,000 veterans now have gotten to see their memorials in Washington, D.C. for free. And that's just one example of the community involvement EECU takes oh so seriously. Pick up the phone and become a member today. 1-800-538-3328. That's 800-538-3328.